This is John Costa on Spotlight on Heritage with Rob Watson this week. Rob, how are you keeping?
I'm very well, thank you, John.
Good, good. I'm not allowed to mention the weather. You told me off last week. That's the last thing we have to mention. So I'm sorry if you come to us for a weather report. This is the last time it will ever get mentioned.
I can talk to you about my breakfast if you want.
Maybe we move on to, yeah, what did you eat for breakfast, Connor? So, I don't know, maybe people come to a sort of weather report there. I really don't know. So this week on Spotlight on Heritage, I'm joined by someone who I'm very intrigued to talk to, actually. He's a very nice young man. Rob and I are allowed to say things like this because we're old and curly at the edges, like an old British rail sandwich. So when you come across someone who works in the heritage sector or industry who seems to be doing good stuff, it's nice to talk to them. And that's Sean Dudley from Goldfinch Heritage. How are you, Sean?
Yeah, very good, thank you, John. Cool. Nice to be here.
Well, no, thank you for taking up the time to come and speak to us. I'm intrigued to find out about how you got into it and stuff, so I'm going to dive right in. So why are you interested in heritage?
Yeah, it's a big question, isn't it, that? Why am I interested in heritage? I'm interested in the stories that sort of underpin the world around us and that often perhaps don't come to the fore quite as much as they might. I think everyone has an interesting backstory. Everyone has something to say, even if they don't maybe know it themselves, they may be part of something and can contribute. And I've always found place and people and stories very interesting. And then over the course of time, heritage was sort of how I found myself. I wanted to work in that space, and now I've been doing it professionally for 3 years, and it's been great. Yeah, I've really enjoyed it.
So was it study as well? Did you study at uni and that kind of stuff?
So my kind of background in that sense is I studied English at English literature at Goldsmiths in South London as an undergraduate, and I graduated way back in 2012. And then I moved into publishing, writing for magazines and writing articles, etc., for websites. And I just found myself almost as a hobby initially, researching things in Leicester, which is where I was living, finding these little nuggets of information and just wanting to learn more and learn more and learn more. So I decided to do a master's at the University of Leicester at the Centre for Urban History, which was all about kind of trying to develop my research skills and understand and get a qualification that might help me move into the heritage space more readily. I did the masters, but the year got broken up by COVID. So that was a kind of through things.
One of those weird ones. Yeah. Like, you know, anyone involved in education during COVID will be able to comment on that.
Yeah, very much so. So I kept working in the marketing job, which I was in at the time. And then I thought, can I potentially move into heritage through perhaps not traditional avenues? So I decided to set up as a freelancer, and I essentially set up my business. So it was predominantly marketing, freelance marketing work with as much freelance heritage work as I could possibly
get hold of. So like bending it into that subject if you were possible.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And when I started, which was July 2022, it was probably 90% marketing work and 10% heritage work. And what's nice is that now in July 2025, it's probably 75, 80% heritage work and 15, 20%.
So you really managed to kind of spin it around.
Yeah. And that's the pleasing thing, because obviously I've been able to move into the area that I really want to be working in and find most interesting. So that's really rewarding.
Now, I think the first time I came across you, you were doing something with the Two Funky guys about that sort of, I mean, I was doing something for them as well. And then you got involved in that around the sort of the Black Record Shop. Black music, black record shops and stuff like that, you know, sort of doing the research and the footwork, pulling together things like books and events and stuff like that. Do you like something that you can immerse yourself in?
Yeah, absolutely.
Then see an end result as in like a media product.
Yeah, I think it's always really rewarding to see that kind of, name up in light sounds wrong, but that end product, outcome, whatever it may be. And often my work is often I like to think of it as a little bit like a sort of centre midfielder that's running around making the tackles and doing that. And then someone else is maybe scoring the goal.
Gets their name on the score sheet and the glory. Yeah. Gets called up for England because they're doing that kind of stuff. Now, when we were talking originally about what you were doing as well. You mentioned about a project, a personal project, like all of us, you know, like Rob's the same as me. You know, you've always got a personal project that's bubbling away about, you know, a particular street or an event that you've seen or you've been part of in the past. Have you been able to keep any of those personal projects going, or suddenly are you finding everything's focused on developing your sort of heritage engagement and work? It's hard, isn't it? Because one and the other, and then you'd really love to work on your own project and then you've got to get funding and you're like, oh God, but do I need a partner? Is it easy to do that? And then someone comes along with, hey, would you like a 6-month contract to do this? And you're like, yes, pay my bills.
That's exactly
people don't forget, think about that with heritage, because everyone's a volunteer in the heritage sector. Unless you work in it or you're a volunteer, you forget about us people floating about in the middle.
Yeah, it's interesting to meet somebody else with that sort of experience. Yeah, absolutely. So there's a few, I know, heritage projects that are maybe a little bit more personal and I wanted to explore just off my own back. Funding is so difficult as a freelancer to get hold of, because often with the big funders, they want you to be involved with an organization of some description. So it is trying to find a balance of paid work and then passion projects, and finding time to do the passion projects. I'd say I've got a few irons in the fire on that front, but in all honesty, it's having to probably take a back seat at the moment, just because work is work and you need to pay the bills. And there's a lot going on in outside of my work, which means I can't really afford to take much time off. Having said that, when the time's right, the passion projects, such as you mentioned, there was one about Highfield Street in Leicester, which I was interested in kind of trying to develop some interest in and get some movement within and explore the history of that street. So maybe down the line, that'll be something that will get picked back up. But
unless there's a really interesting place to do what you do, because there's so many interesting places, you know, like buildings, but then, you know, people that are in these buildings, different communities that have been here for quite a long time. And obviously, I know we've spoken about the Irish community as well, which is one of the earliest communities here in Leicester, sort of post-war. You know, a lot of my former in-laws came over from Ireland and stuff, and then they kind of met, you know, before like the Ugandan Asians came to that area and stuff. So there's all these communities, and then a lot of these new arrival communities tend to be able to hoover up the funding. I mean, I know I've had Kenyan Asians come to me and go, hey, you've done this Ugandan Asian project, but we were here first. Okay. So you kind of get a little bit of attention sometimes. And something like the Emerald Centre, it's almost like, well, the Irish community's now got the Emerald Centre, kind of get on with it. We don't need to do anything with you anymore. Yeah. Whereas in fact, it's actually quite important to go back and revisit how we treated Irish people when they came to the UK, but certainly with Leicester.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Emerald Centre is an institution now, particularly in Leicester's Irish community, but
I used inverted commas there, yeah. Emerald Centre. It's an ownership place, isn't it?
But yeah, it depends on, there's people of Irish background, to take an example in Leicester, that will have great-great-grandparents that came over from Ireland, perhaps, and don't know that much about their Irish ancestry, but will have an Irish surname or an Irish first name and maybe have a seed of sort of interest in that. And therefore, I would argue it's important to give people such as that the opportunity to explore, you know, the migratory challenges that Irish people faced and people from other parts of the world faced. The more access you can give people to information that source, the better, in my opinion.
Yeah, there's a great documentary I remember seeing many years ago when I did stuff with the Phoenix. We had a documentary film festival by Steve Friendship, I think it was, called From the Shannon to the Saw. Mm. And there's about, I think it's about 6 or 8 people that have interviewed about coming, their first time coming to Leicester and who they worked for and stuff. And actually, it's like a social history of Leicester, like, you know, names like Cora's and all these things that you'd recognise, street names that you'd recognise, pubs that you'd recognise, obviously. And we kind of forget about that community sometimes when we're celebrating, particularly when it's focused on new arrivals. Okay, so are you going to write a book?
Am I going to write a book?
What's it going to be about, and why haven't you started? Or maybe you have. Maybe that's one of your passion projects.
Do you know, book writing is something that I have always had a real interest in. I read loads of all kinds of different things, fiction, non-fiction, etc. I should write a book. That's a thought that I haven't really touched upon. But yeah, that's probably something that I should maybe look to incorporate in my plans the next 5 years or so, yeah.
Well, Rob and I always talk about, you know, thought leadership and, you know, setting up a think tank or, you know, running independent museums like I do. Sometimes you just need to put your flag in the sand and people say, I think so what you do, you know, having seen what you do, I think having, you know, a publication And I can do it in conversation with you as well then. it could put your flag in and then people kind of get to see what you do.
Yeah, it's a good idea, yeah. Yeah.
So Sean, you've got a project at the moment where you're working with young people in new parks with soft touch arts, I believe. I think that's fantastic. I mean, what I like about your Instagram is seeing you out and about with these young people. It's not just sitting around a table. Hey, I'm Sean. Let's do a mind map. Here's a post-it. Feel like you're contributing in this co-created heritage project I'm doing. You're actually taking these guys out and seeing it. So what's the kind of purpose behind the project? What is it you're doing? And what's the output at the end that you're looking to get?
Yeah, sure. So the project is called New Parks in the Making. And it's essentially an exploration of the history of New Parks, which was Leicester's first post-war council estate. I am working with Soft Touch Arts to essentially run sessions with a group of young people at Harrowwood Academy. It's recently changed its name to Harrowwood Academy. It was New College prior to that. And essentially, it's a mix of art and heritage. So I'm working with a talented art worker called Benvie Berriman. She is leading the artistic side of the project, and I'm leading the heritage side of the project. And what we're aiming to do is create a heritage trail around New Parks, which will take in, I think it's 9 locations in New Parks that have a kind of cultural, social relevance to the history of the wider place. And the aim, this is not 100% certain as I say this, but the aim is to have boards around New Parks that people will be able to scan QR codes and see pieces of artwork that the students have done, which are relevant to the specific locations. And then also access interviews that we will be doing with people from New Parks who have grown up in New Parks and lived a lot of their lives in New Parks. And they're going to be speaking about the various locations. So it's a really interesting project. It's challenging in its way because a lot of these young people are perhaps, 13, 14. This is a generation of TikTok and Snapchat and all the rest of it. So concentration spans perhaps aren't what they were, but there are definitely really interesting conversations that are happening. And just it's nice to give a sense of place and importance to an area like New Parks, which is not the most affluent, not the most highly thought of, but has a really strong community spirit, has a really interesting history in its own right, both socially and kind of more academically. Even there's a lot of interesting little points and places in what is now New Parks that over the course of the past couple of hundred years had really interesting buildings and locations on them. So it's been a really rewarding project to be involved with. It's coming up towards the outcome stage now, so we're really starting to knuckle down on the outputs on the heritage trail, and it's just been a real privilege to be involved with.
And as everyone will tell you who doesn't work with young people, they're not interested in heritage. And then as everyone will tell you who works in heritage, who goes out of their way to go and work with and alongside and, genuinely co-create and co-design something with young people, they are interested. Mm. It's just you need to ask them which way they want to do it. And sometimes you have to compromise your own view of what your nice little outcome is going to be. Because they'll tell you something, and you're like, oh, I'm not quite sure whether that's true. Are you enjoying that aspect of it, of working with the young people? Like I said, particularly that age group, they're not always necessarily postgrads or students that are kind of engaging. They're more like, I'm not sure why I'm here, but suddenly you're engaging them with about a place that they recognise or they know, or their parents went or their grandparents went, or a park bench, that kind of stuff.
It's an interesting thing. There's definitely real interest when you start to talk to these young people about their lives. And the point I made earlier about kind of stories and who we are and how that relates to place and the areas that we live our lives in is something that this project is really helping to bring to the fore. So these young people might think, oh, there's not much going on in New Parks. But once you start to dig a little bit deeper into their stories and the lives that they've lived, there's loads going on in New Parks because everyone's got their own story. Every house has a story, every street has a story. So it's fascinating. And there is, as you say, you have to earn a level of trust, and then you have to earn a level, then you start to earn a level of insight that's really, really rewarding.
And what will your output be? Is it an exhibition? Is it a documentary?
It's the Heritage Trail. So
that will be the
output. Yeah. So the plan is to either have kind of boards that will be put up in these various locations, but we'd like to take it a step further and potentially put things on like street furniture and stuff like that to make it a little bit more permanent and kind of interactive, I suppose, out and about in new parks. Yeah.
So you're listening to John Costa and Rob Watson on Spotlight on Heritage. And this week we're with Sean Dudley from Goldfinch Heritage.
That's right, yeah.
Now, it wasn't always called Goldfinch. Do you notice how I hesitated there? It wasn't always called Goldfinch Heritage. Tell us what it was called before, and then I'm going to, and then you need to tell me why you called it that.
Okay, so it was originally called Cardulis Content and Historical Research. And as I mentioned earlier, there was a kind of marketing element and a heritage element, and that's still the case. I called it that to cover everything that I was kind of doing and offering, but I found firstly that it would be a little confusing potentially for potential clients who may think, oh, he's the heritage guy, when they need marketing services or vice versa.
And it's a real challenge when you work for yourself as an individual consultant, isn't it, that you're kind of dealing with people's expectations of what you don't want to do or that you don't have time to do, rather than coming to you and say, are you interested in doing this?
Yeah. No, absolutely.
You know, I'd love to field calls like that, you know what I mean? You've got time to do this, you just don't get that.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. And so I found trying to differentiate between that to be very important. The name Cardulis, so Cardulis is the Latin name for goldfinch, which is a bird that I'm quite into my nature, and birds are something that I find really interesting. During COVID, actually, I used to live in a flat on the ground floor, and there was a little yard at the back, and there was loads of goldfinches in the garden that would come and kind of visit while I couldn't leave the house, but the goldfinches would do what they wanted. And for one reason or another, that kind of particular bird stuck with me. So when I was setting up something that I thought would reflect my interests and identity to an extent, I picked that name. It was fine, and people, you know, remembered it, but it also was quite hard to pronounce, so I realized, and potentially difficult to spell when it comes to an email address or a website. And so,
did you get that email I sent you?
Yeah, I probably missed a couple, John. Yeah,
it's one
I probably
of them,
did. So I thought, how perhaps this isn't ideal. And so I decided to split the business into two. Because of that, essentially, so to avoid any complications that wouldn't really work for me in the long run. So Cardulis is something that's kind of been put on the back burner, and now I operate under Goldfinch Heritage, and I also operate under the name Greenfinch Content PR and Social Media, which is the marketing arm of what I do.
Fascinating. I think it's fascinating, to be honest, about what you do and how you go. And now I do look at your social media quite a lot, your Instagram, because I find it fascinating. And I think you do a lot of stuff UK wide. You know, you did a sports project as well recently.
Yeah.
That was quite fascinating. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I'm actually going up to, it's with the Museum of Bolton up near Manchester, and I'm going up there tomorrow for the launch, which is exciting. It's a history of Reebok, which was the kind of famous sports brand, which was originally founded in Bolton. And there's a long sort of lineage. So J.W. Foster was the original company. And then the original J.W. Foster's grandson is a gentleman called Joe Foster, who is the founder of Reebok. He separated from the original business, set up Reebok. There's also a company called Walsh. Norman Walsh was another J.W. Foster designer and footwear kind of expert who set up on his own as well. So there's all these little tangents to it, all stemming from the industrial history of Bolton as a town. Reebok, as you likely know, became a huge, massive, multi-billion pound company. So from, you know, a small factory in a back street in Bolton, it became this massive global conglomerate. I've been working with a company called Broaden Films, which are an excellent film company based up in Manchester. They've created a 25-minute documentary with what we have created that. So I've done the kind of research in the background, contributed to in a kind of executive producer type role, and the end result is really, really, really pleasing to see. It's a really good documentary.
So tomorrow is it an opening event, or is it a screening of the documentary?
It's both. So there's an exhibition at the museum which will have loads of different shoes and items from that have been sent over from Reebok in Boston in America, and that will provide visitors to the museum with a view of physical objects and information about this that story. And then there's also a viewing of the film as well, which I'm really excited to see on the big screen. I've just been sent the last edit earlier this morning, so yeah, it's really pleasing to be involved in something that's like we were talking about. You do a lot of the legwork and you sort of dig into things, and then to see something really polished and pleasing is great.
So Sean, I want to pick up with you something now. We had a guy in, Ken Ogbourne, a couple of weeks ago, Ken the actor, you know, we spoke about branding and stuff, so quite interesting. And he was saying about he meets people like 11 times before he kind of might get a bit of work out of them. And so we spoke about this, you know, when Ken's being Ken the actor and doing marketing, as I'm going to pull your marketing and PR expertise here, he's looking at work, not this Christmas, like the following Christmas, or work for next summer. Now, you're talking about long lead-in times for, like, you know, documentaries, or, you know, you're researching things for, like, you know, the Black Music Store project. It must be quite, how do you deal with that challenge, which is, this is going to take me this long, how do I then market and PR what I want to do to make sure I've got another bit of work to follow on from this? Is it something that you're conscious of, or are you constantly always, like, networking and doing your thing?
Yeah, it's a really interesting point. I know I've met Ken a couple of times, so he'll probably get some work out of me.
Well, this is number five, yeah. A few more times, yeah. Don't keep him waiting. Yeah.
No, he's a really good guy, and he's helped me actually quite a lot of different things. So it's interesting to hear that his experience is quite similar to mine on that front. There is definitely a case of, it's something that I perhaps didn't fully anticipate when I went freelance, but I learned quite quickly that you need to form connections, and often the work will come in the least anticipated avenues. I believe in being somebody that, I heard this phrase, which is, be in the rooms that you're not physically in. So if a company are having a meeting about a project,
how are you in their mind?
Yeah, what they, you need to be about, yeah. Oh well, we could get Sean to do that, or we could get, you know, XYZ to do that, because they trust your expertise. Without it saves them a job of having to advertise, say, for 1,000 applications to come in. So it's a lot of it is about networking. A lot of it is about being in the right place at the right time. Being open to opportunities is really important. Being flexible. And then also accepting that sometimes you can put a lot of work in with a project or a person that you think may lead you to get work, and it just doesn't materialize. And that's just how it goes. You can't sort of rest on your laurels or expect anyone to bend over backwards to help you out. You just have to be truthful and honest about what you do and how you do it. And then trust the process, I suppose, is what I'd say on that.
I mean, a couple of months ago, Mum and I, Joan Costa, who's been on our podcast a couple of times now, she quite enjoys it. She's like, who's your guest this week? So why are you angling to get on? It's quite funny. We went and were interviewed by Viv Frockett at the St. Philip's Centre for their project about moving to Leicester. And that was really interesting. And I've just recently interviewed Viv as well for my 10 days of conflict memory about the story about her own father. But I know that she was coming to the end of her commitment with that project. And you've kind of picked that ball up and moving it forward. That's fantastic. For me, that was an alt tick. That's great. Sean's doing that. That's perfect. So what's your involvement going to be in the project? Is it continuing with the oral history recordings, or is it more moving now to the products that she was talking about the displays and the exhibitions and stuff like that, which fits obviously naturally with your skill set?
Yeah, so it's the latter. I did do some work for the project, which was interviewing, I think I interviewed about 12 people for the oral history aspects of that project. As you say, Viv's coming to the end of her commitment with the project. And so I am very pleased to be kind of stepping into her shoes and leading things such as the exhibitions, the book, the website, all of these different outputs that will come as part of it.
And there was
the
a physical exhibition as well as one that goes on the road, I seem to remember. Yeah, is that still the case?
There are a couple of different exhibitions too. I have to admit, I've been told that I'm going to take over. We haven't really moved it forwards in terms of the specifics.
You've not got your mug in the kitchen yet.
Not quite, but that's happening later in the month. So yeah, it's a really, really, really good project to be involved with. The St. Philip Centre is a, you know, very highly regarded place for research, and to be involved with the projects of theirs is brilliant.
I think a lot of people probably think of the St. Philip's Centre and not necessarily think of what it does. Mm. Actually, it's probably one of those best kept secrets where when people go down there, they're actually quite shocked about the things that they do and you know, what Tom's doing down there, moving things forward. So
yeah,
interesting. So what do you do in your downtime? You know, when you're not like writing proposals or doing research and stuff, how do you fill your time? You said you read a lot. Is that kind of your?
Yeah, I read a lot. I do a lot of sport. So I do a lot of cycling. I play cricket. I play football. Do a lot of walking. I've recently moved to the countryside. So being out in the fields and stuff is great. I try to stay busy. I'm kind of one of those people that doesn't really, I switch off, but I switch off from work and do something else that I feel is quite productive. I don't just slouch about, if you know what I mean.
You switch off from work and do something that's work-related. Yeah, I know what you mean. You're talking to the converted with Rob and I. So, Sean, just to finish up, thank you for coming in and speaking to us today. You mentioned cycling there in the previous segment. I know that you do the sort of annual cycle around all of the churches and stuff, because you've mentioned that before at the Heritage Partnership meeting that you go to as well. So tell us a little bit about that and why do you do that? Does it kind of, is it a combination of your heritage and being able to cycle and keep fit at the same time and raise money?
Yeah, so I work with the Leicestershire Historic Churches Trust, and as a Historic Churches Trust in England, there's an event called Ride and Stride, which is a nationwide event, and it's essentially where people get sponsored to ride a bike or walk or run if they want, ride a horse, essentially get between a number of churches in their area. I am the coordinator for Leicestershire, so I liaise with all of the local organisers across the county to ensure that their church is open on the day, which is the second Saturday of September, so it's coming up quite fast. My kind of heritage, my initial heritage interest was really kind of ecclesiastical architecture and churches generally. I find religion really, really interesting as a social entity, if you will. And I've studied a lot on church. I've done a lot of work on churches. So when I was asked by the Churches Trust to get involved, I was more than happy to do so.
It was a natural fit for
you. Yeah, it really was. And then when it comes to Ride and Stride, it's just a really nice event. It raises money for local churches and the Churches Trust. So say you were to take part, £50, and you raise £100, £50 would go to a church of your choice and £50 would go to the Churches Trust. And then churches can apply for that money for roof repairs or architectural work on their building. A lot of the local organisers put out drinks and are very friendly and welcoming, and it's just, I rode it for the first time last year. I managed to get around to about 30 churches on the day, and it was just to speak to people that are involved looking after local churches that have pride in their community, and to see, you know, Leicestershire in all different forms over the same day, to travel quite far around the county was brilliant. So yeah, it's a really pleasing event, and it's one that, as I say, we're moving towards this year. So it's, to give it a little plug, it's Saturday the 13th of September this year. I'll be riding it again. I haven't got a route sorted yet, but I will do soon. And it's just a really enjoyable day. Hopefully the weather last year was good. Hopefully the weather will be good again this year, because if it tips it down, it might be less enjoyable.
And just one final thing, we get Sue Lester comes on quite regularly from the Leicestershire and Rutland Family History Society. So for us, talking about family history and doing your own heritage story or, you know, backstory is a really important thing. What kind of detail have you gone into with your own roots? From where do you hark?
Yes, where do I hark? I've got an interesting background. So none of my family are from Leicester. My mum and dad met at the University of Leicester back in the late 70s, early 80s, I'm not sure, and settled around here. So that's why I was born around here and lived around here. My mum grew up in Warwickshire, but her parents were both from Cork in Ireland. And I've got a lot of family still in Cork, kind of cousins, aunties and uncles, etc., and go over quite frequently. My dad grew up in Devon. He grew up in a town called Newton Abbot in Devon. But his family background was interesting. So his mum was also from Cork, but she was born in a city called Quetta, which is in, today it's in Pakistan. It was in British India when she was born, but that's kind of a weird route to go down. And then my dad's dad was from Tottenham in North London. So yeah, really mixed group of kind of people from different parts of the world. I do feel a big affiliation to Cork in particular, in Ireland.
There's a pull. I think when you're Irish, have you got any Irish heritage? There's always that pull they talk about. Don't
there is, yeah. I love being over in there. My partner, Kat, her family's from Galway, so we go over quite a lot. It's a lot of family there and spend a lot of time out there. Also to Devon as well. I support Torquay United Football Club, which was my dad's local team when he was growing up. So he's burdened me with that, which is a
parental burden of supporting my team. Yeah, for your childhood.
But yeah, that's kind of the from where I hark, I suppose. But Leicester, I was born in Leicester. I grew up in Sowerby, which is about 5-6 miles north of Leicester. And so Leicester is home now. Despite the fact kind of it hasn't been for anyone else in my family prior to this generation, if you will.
Fantastic. Sean, thanks very much for talking to me.
No problem. Thank you.